So I want to talk to you about one of maybe the most coolest project I worked on in the last 4 years. It's called Code, which not only has a cool name, it's also pretty cool to use. And I thought I'd talk a little bit about the journey, how we started 5 years ago and what we shipped along the way and kind of how we survived inside the Microsoft jungle, right? We're a small development team, and when he came, it was pretty interesting how we kind of engage with other communities inside Microsoft. So that's the team. We are in Wallishofen, not Wallisellen, even though we like the food in Wallisellen much, much more. I guess we are just too loud for them in Wallisellen. So we are a small team in Wallishofen. I feel we're a little bit like the Swiss soccer team. We're very international. Even players from Basel, right? Which and even in Redmond, right? So we and you know, Microsoft is very centralized when it comes to software development. There is Redmond, which is the big campus, and you cannot survive as a software development team with some great connections to the main, to the kind of heart of software development in Redmond. So that's why we also have some cool team members and my manager in Redmond. And you see, even they, these guys, they cannot come from the same country. So we're a really colorful team. And the mission, I digged out the mail I got. So, you know, so I was an IBM Distinguished Engineer. Then I told them I joined Microsoft. Then I became an IBM Extinguished Engineer. Right? This went very fast. And then shortly after, I became a Microsoft Distinguished Engineer, which I was very proud of. And this was the welcome mail, with kind of what's my job description. Of course, I joined Microsoft because I want something new, right? So I have done lots of good stuff at IBM, but I want to do something new. And that's what Jason Sander told me to do. Envision what you can do in the browser for developers, right? Imagine, you know, we do our slide presentations in the browser. Can you do also your coding in the browser? Right? This was kind of our mission. And the long-term thing was, can you make it as successful as what you have on the desktop today? So we started. And as I said, I want to run my team as a startup. So I gave us 3 months until we have to ship something, which means shipping, you need to get a partner. Microsoft has this nice approach that you partner with other teams, which means partnering, right? You go together, you succeed together, you work together. So one of our first partners was OneDrive, because they needed a way to edit your code, right? Obviously, if you have a file and you have it on OneDrive and it's code, you'd like to open it, it should be colorized, it should allow you to edit, and so on. So this was our first kind of stage we had, the first partner, which was very good for us because we could work on our editor and so on. And the editor piece you will see now, this kind of is whatever we grew around it. The next thing we found in the web is you want to learn. You want to learn how to program in the web, right? And these are called playgrounds. So we start to use our code editor for playgrounds, which means you can write code in the browser, you can get feedback, you get IntelliSense, and so on. The cool thing here was, right, we run really language analysis, parsing, abstract syntax trees. You do all that in the browser. So that was also a very important stage on the journey. Visual Studio Online, there it's more about collaboration, right? You want to see the diffs in code, you want to comment on the code. Again, a great scenario for the browser, right? Because why should I do that online? On my desktop, I can do it on a browser from anywhere, wherever I want. That's a very interesting partner, not many people know of, but if you're a developer and you work with Edge or IE and you want to debug, and you want to look at source code, then again, use our editor. This was a very interesting partnership because they had very ambitious performance numbers for us. Right? Because they said before, the editor was written natively in C. So if you use your technology, which comes from the browser, which means JavaScript, HTML, you should be as fast as native code, which was actually the greatest gift we could get because this helped us from the beginning to be very fast, right? Our editor is very fast. And many people ask me, how come your editor is so fast? It's just sweating, right? It's just engineering, right? You measure, you make it faster again. So it's no secret sauce. But that's what's the key that led us to succeed and go further. The next stage what we explored was in this journey, can you edit a website in the browser, right? So that makes sense, right? You have an Azure website, you want to peek behind it, you want to edit it, change it, debug it maybe also, and so on. So we made this available 2 years ago. This all was pretty promising. The feedback we got was favorable, but we found developers, they like to develop in the desktop, right? They want to have the desktop integration. They don't like to work always in a VM or something like that. So we were at the point where we had to decide, as a lean startup, right, do we pivot, change direction, or do we try continue to do everything in the browser? Then what was interesting, kind of a change happened, right? So .NET was announced to become open source. At the same time, after talking to lots of startups, we noticed and learned many developers, they develop on non-Windows platforms. So the question was, what can we do for them? Right, there are many developers out there that we would like to give pleasure with cool tools. So for this reason, we decided, well, developers in developing in the browser has some great scenarios that I want to show you, but my 7x24 coding, I want to do on my desktop. Right, so that was kind of a conclusion we made at that point, and that's why we decided to pivot and change the direction. And we changed from a pure browser-based tool to a desktop tool. And the vision then was we develop something which runs on Windows, OS X, and Linux. Just for me, kind of, how many of you develop on Windows? Some of you. How many develop on OS X? See, I don't ask them to stand up, but there are, right? So we have developers there that like it. How many of you use Linux? See, right? So that's, we want to get to all developers, right? We not only want to get to Windows, we want to get them all. We want to make them all happy, right? That's our simple, boring mission, right? Make developers happy, no matter where they are, no matter what platform they use, and what tools they use. So for this reason, we came with the idea, we develop, I would say, a new offering which gives you a new choice if you're on another platform, which gives you a good editor, that which takes over some of the strengths, almost the franchise of Visual Studio, like the IntelliSense, debugging. So we want to get that over and keep that. But we don't want to keep everything of Visual Studio over. Because what we also saw that developers today use more than one tool. Right? They not only use always Visual Studio, they switch to another editor, say it's be Sublime or whatever. So you want to get into this segment. That's basically the spectrum, right? You can have a full IDE like Visual Studio, or you can be lightweight and an editor. Editors are known to be small, lightweight, fast, keyboard-centered. IDEs are a little heavier, they can do more, but have more weight. So where you want to go with our tool was basically in the middle. Not in the middle, more to the editor side. You want to still be lightweight and fast, but you want to bring over the green features we love from Visual Studio to the editor, right? That was the simple mission we had. Because we still love features from the IDE, right? I love IntelliSense, I love refactoring. I don't want to miss it. So then this ended up with Visual Studio Code, which is and feels like a desktop app. But what's interesting, behind the scene, it's still our same technology, which is browser-based. It's still JavaScript, HTML, CSS behind it. And it's still fast, thanks that we got hammered by other teams to make our stuff fast. Okay, so what's behind it? So there is, of course, lots of code that runs in the browser. And in order to run it on the desktop, we leverage lots of open source technology, right? We stand on the shoulders of others, which was another great start that helped that, right? Microsoft opened up for open source. Not only consumes open source, it also gives back to open source. So we leverage that technology, right? We leverage Chromium. That's the rendering engine you get in the browser on a desktop. We leverage Electron, which is from GitHub, which allows us to run browser-based code as a desktop application using native features like the menu bar, the dock, and so on, so you can break out of the jail from the browser. And of course, with Electron also comes Node, which gives you the platform API to talk to the operating system. So, as I said, it's all browser-based technology, and the browser-based technology, that comes one thing which is true, you code in JavaScript, right? Now, JavaScript, programming JavaScript is very rewarding. You have this beautiful, fast feedback loop, right? You make a change, refreshing the browser, off you go again. Beautiful, right? But once your code starts to grow, you sometimes start to feel like juggling with chainsaws, right? Because refactoring a JavaScript program, you're getting a little thrill seeker, right? Because you don't know who references the symbol, because it has no type information. And the other thing that is challenging about JavaScript is its language has evolved a lot, right? And it's on the left, you see JavaScript, the definitive guide, and on the right, well, here on the left, you see JavaScript, the good parts, right? There is some, what's the remaining part, right? That's what you ask. You can do lots of funny stuff with JavaScript, and you can bang your head against the wall 5 times. But again, we were lucky, right? I must say, how many times we were lucky in this project? So in parallel to getting this vision to work in the browser, Microsoft started to work on TypeScript. And we were the first partner of TypeScript. Again, you see this partnering. We're constantly dating other teams. So we dated the TypeScript team, and we really worked with them, and were the first client to build a large TypeScript code base. And TypeScript gives us like C sharp, right? It's kind of JavaScript, how it is, would have been designed by a C sharp aware person. Well, in fact, it was designed by Anders Halsberg, which has done both languages. And Anders is a great language designer. So you get the things which we're missing in the JavaScript. Some optional types, which gives us better tooling, better API descriptions, and also gives us freedom of change. Right, JavaScript, writing code in JavaScript is like carving code in stone, right? Because it's so hard to change. With TypeScript, we become lightweight again, and we can refactor. And also, it allows us to use new features of forthcoming language standards today, which also gives us a nice ground to really grow a large code base. So, scaling our code base. So it's a 4-year-old project, or 5 years old. It's all in JavaScript, and I think what I'm most proud of is we're still alive, right? And the code has grown from 50,000 lines to, I think, 350 or 400,000 lines of code. And along the path, you see we have more and more adopted TypeScript, and you also had to make more and more architectural maintenance to keep the code alive. And you know, software development is a debt-producing practice, right? So that's what we do. What do you do against debt production? You reduce debt, right? So that's what you do in my team. We work in iterations, monthly iterations. I don't want to say we develop agile. We just ship software, right? That's what you do. But in one of our iterations, 1 week is always debt reduction, because that's how you survive. If you accumulate debt, you will die. So that's how we survived over the 4 to 5 years with our large code base. Okay, so in end, this brought us this pivot to use this shell, which allows it to run on a desktop. We bring in our existing code base. This brought us finally to Build Conference last year, where it was announced that Microsoft launches the Visual Studio Code, a free platform, cross-platform code editor, OS X, Linux, and Windows. Of course, this announcement went out 30 minutes too early, right? You can imagine how people had fun. We were all in the session, the announcement came out, and all people complained the link doesn't work to download. This was a pretty intense moment. But we got rewarded by lots of love on Hacker News, right? So we were, for over a day, we were number one on Hacker News, and that's what you want to tell your son, right? Hey, son, I was on Hacker News for 2 days, and then he looks up to me. So, and interestingly, you know, I looked back and was digging out what are the other Microsoft news they made on Hacker News, and interestingly, the code announcement made it to number 2, right? So the .NET open sourcing got more points. So number 1 is when Steve Jobs died, obviously. But you see, we're still high up there, and we even above about the new Steve Ballmer retired within 12 months from Microsoft, or even Satya Nadella, right? See, more points on Hacker News. This is gives us a good feel. So, but then the next challenge came along. Now we had this tool. People could use it. It's free. But now came the feature request, right? That's the problem with customers, right? Once you have them, they want more. That's the deal. And the number one feature they want is extensions, right? So we had to address the problem. We had a four-year-old code base. You want to allow people to write extensions, which means they have to get some API, they have to get some tooling and so on. So how you do that, right? So I must say we really love extensions. We love them all. But if you have too many extensions, right, your beautiful architecture starts to break apart. The UI becomes a kitchen sink, right? Everybody contributes to the context menu. The menu starts at the top of the screen and goes to the bottom of the screen. Not very happy, right? So what do we do? So we had to invest a lot in architecture work. And what we came up with is an architecture. Now we leverage operating system facilities, and these are processes. And what you learn from Chromium, multiple processes are a good way to isolate things, to make things more stable. So what we have decided to do is we run all our extensions in a separate process. Right? So no matter how many extensions we have, we can bring up our main tool and run the extension in a separate process, which means our startup time will not become slower the more extensions we load, because it all happens in a separate process. The other good thing is, no, an extension cannot impact our main behavior, right? An extension writes an endless loop that wants to keep the CPU busy, that it can no longer save your file is not possible because we have this isolation. So that was a good move, took us some sweat to do, but it was worth it. So the next thing, once you have extensions, we are a tool, right? And what you learn in the modern tools is that they have to support many languages, right? We call this the long tail of languages, right? Because a new language comes along, and what we also found, many developers don't want to wait till an IDE catches up with them, right? You have to really be open to get new and rich language support. And that's basically what we have. Then from our extension host process, we talk again to services, which are other processes which implement a debugger or a language service, which has another great benefit, right? This code here, that's all JavaScript. Now, when it comes to here, you have another process. You can use the language you want, right? You can write your extension in C#, your language service, which we did in order to provide C# IntelliSense. We used a wonderful Roslyn open source project to power our IntelliSense in code through using the C# implementation, which just talks through IPC to our extension host. And this really took off, right? If you look at today on our marketplace, we have, let's see, we have really tons of languages. And what's interesting is many of those languages go far beyond coloring. They also give you IntelliSense, they give you code navigation. Some of them even give you debugging. And that's really, we didn't have to do that. Right? It's very clear from us, we cannot do this ourselves unless we have an extension architecture. So let's go back. And I want everybody, OK, now the next thing is, I skipped something, no? Oh, yeah, I skipped. So I apologize. No, I think it would be silly to me to not show you code when I do a talk about code. So I want to do that. And what I want to do with you quickly in 5 minutes, I want to develop an extension, right, that you can see how easy to do that, and you see what's behind it in code. So let's quickly do that. So I'm here on the command line, and I just say, I call a scaffolding tool. And that's also not something I would have thought of 10 years ago. Will I ever be on stage and do a demo and show a command line? Nah. But times are changing, right? Today, some of the developers, they love their command line. That's what they say. I love my command line. These are the millennials, right? The millennials, they are on 20 in the year 2000. They just don't want to have this tightly integrated tool. They want to have the flow they want. So they like command lines. So I create a new extension in TypeScript. Demo. I'm the publisher. We have a marketplace. Of course, we need to know your publisher. I don't want a Git repository. It downloads some stuff from npm, which makes you always nervous when I have a wireless connection, but we are good. We pull down the API definition, which will be another interesting talk, how we preserve our API. But the cool thing is, since you have a separate process, we are in 100% control of the API, right? So our API cannot leak because we design it. So let's run the code. I run code alpha, right? So we have multiple developer channels, and of course, we want to be on the bleeding edge one. So here we have the code. We have some markdown, right? We have nice markdown support, all this crap. So let's write the extension. The extension I want to write to you, I talked about how important it is to have many languages and so on. So I want to find out how many languages are supported in code. So I go in here. I have here a function that gets called when my extension is activated. And all I want to do here is I want to ask from code languages.getLanguages, right? Okay, that gives me back a denable, and that's a promise. So that's, but you see, you get IntelliSense, you get all the richness of what you love from Visual Studio, even in this lightweight tool. Then I get the languages. Okay, and then I do a closure. And of course, you see ligatures. Actually, that's something nice you get from web technology, right? Don't you think it's nice if you can write x equals 1, right? And you see that as a 1. Or not equals equals, right? This is nice, right? So that's nice. You get benefit from the web technology, innovation web technology. We can bring it all back in, work with the community. It's pretty nice. And now I forgot what I wanted to do. VS Code dot window. It's a namespace. But I explore all my API. You see, you get all the API IntelliSense. And I think it's called Quick Pick. Yep. And I show all the languages. OK, that's enough coding. OK? But to show you that we are actually also folding, that's new, right? So people want folding, so we give them folding. People ask for breakpoints, so we give them breakpoints. And now I just press F5. The extension, a new code instance gets started with the extension. I will activate it. Hello is the extension called. I get the breakpoint. You see, you get in the editor, you get data inspection, hovering, all the stuff you expect. When I say continue, then I get a quick box. Sorry, I go there. Come on. Let's get to the quick box. And you see kind of all the 40 languages which are supporting code shown in this quick box. But you see, it took us about 5 minutes from zero to the first extension. This is our goal, right? If you want to have a rich ecosystem, it has to be very easy. You have to have good tools. And that's how you make your developers happy. OK. That's still not enough to make them happy because they want more, right? They want that it's open source. So the next challenge for us was that after all the architecture challenge, in parallel, you have to do the open source challenge. How do we transition what we have closed source, make it open source? And again, I was very happy. The announcement that Visual Studio Code is now open source became number one on Hacker News. So another time, another opportunity for me to impress my son. So what we did, we decided to make this classical split between a branded distribution and an open source community. So that took us a while to communicate it across because people thought we don't get open source. So they started to blog about it. I will do a class about how bad Microsoft understands open source. But we could convince them all because we engage with them. You know, we discuss them in issues. That's the trick, right? If people say bad things about you, engage with them, talk to them, and improve. So we have this split. The open source code, which is on GitHub, under the MIT license, we call this the white label, not branded. And we have Visual Studio Code, which is the branded version, which has a license, which is a Microsoft license, which gives us also a marketplace, telemetry, crash reporting, and so on. So that was the easy part. The hard part is, of course, the transparency thing. Open source means give and take, right? You give something to them, but what you want to take is feedback. But if you don't tell people what you give them, and you're not transparent what you're doing, you don't get feedback because you don't know what to talk to you back to. So what you had to do, we changed everything and put whatever we had in private documents, whatever, we put that in the open, right, on GitHub. We do our open source on GitHub. We document how we do issue tracking, how we do contribute code, what's our coding guidelines, organization, and so on. That was kind of the whole transparency thing. Then we publish our roadmap. People have to know where we're going. And of course, we shocked marketing when we did that, because I wrote here, it will be GA March 31st. That's not something that's a developer, right? That's only marketing can do that. So, but then that's where we say what the features are there, and we're mostly there. Code folding is what I showed you, and so on. And we work in monthly sprints. Well, iteration sprints is too agile. So, and that's fully transparent, right? February, actually today is the last day of February. Let me check where we are. And I will celebrate with you. I think we're almost done, right? That's our plan here. Let me explain. So that's the end game. We document fully in public what we do. When we have an end game, we're not good enough that you don't need an end game. We need an end game every month. We test, we document. Still some things that to be checked off. We don't need complex plans, but we love emojis, right? The muscle guy, stretch goal, and so on. And here we do the full traceability. You know, that's the feature. What's the test? Is it in the release notes? And so on. And I think we're good enough. And together with you, I will close this issue. Huh? February iteration plan is done. We will make it available to the insiders in about 1 or 2 hours. So we push monthly, right, on different channels. OK, that much about transparency. Community engagement, very important. Without an engaged community, you do all the support yourself, right? And that's so wonderful about a good community. It helps you. It not only takes, right? They answer questions for you on Stack Overflow and so on. They help with discussing an issue on GitHub to say, hey, that's a duplicate of this one. It's great. No, I love it. So we use questions, we use Stack Overflow, we direct people there. All the issues discussed happen on GitHub, and I'm proud to say, since you're open source, I've read every comment on GitHub, and that's sometimes a lot when you have some shitstorms about we messed up the color theming and so on. But it's good. No, I think it's the best way to get the sentiment from the community. And the other great sentiment tool for me is Twitter. I'm on Twitter half an hour every day, and actually I love it because you get the immediate pulse of it. So what's also interesting, the same channels we give to the community is also used by Microsoft. Right? Other Microsoft team members, they ask questions on Stack Overflow, which means the community can also chime in to answer. It's a great thing. What else? Yeah, licensing. Yeah, I have almost no more time. But licensing is really hard because we not only give back open source, we consume lots of open source. And it's a common misunderstanding, right? If you open source, you don't have to know what you ship with. That's not the case, right? That's what developers have to learn, right? If you want to ship open source, you have to know what's in there. You have to know what license to ship, because others might want to build a product on what you do. So we have over 100 open source components. And every one of those need to know the license, need to track again, tracking the version, and so on. And that's interesting, right? These are these enterprise open source requirements you run into. And of course, the way to solve it as a toolsmith, you build your own tools to do that. Okay. That's another success story, right? When it comes to Microsoft building a GA product, that means you have to build a product for everyone. So localization accessibility was a plan item on our plan. Some sight-impaired person saw it. They immediately started to comment on it, gave us feedback. And with the help of that, we could improve the accessibility support, which was really great. Now, I love this story because we did accessibility work in public. And we got feedback. And with that feedback, we made it better. Unfortunately, we're not really there where we want to be, right? We collaborate with GitHub on Electron accessibility. We have something which is OK, decent for the build conference on Windows, but OS X and Linux accessibility is not there yet. It's mostly Chromium, which is the limiting factor. OK, so I talked about sentiment. And these are some tweets which show to me it's worth doing, right? So all of a sudden, people are skeptical to Microsoft. They start to embrace and understand that Microsoft is really open and wants to help developers. With that, I'd like to close. So thanks. for your attention. When you go home, you go all to code.visualstudio.com. If you haven't downloaded it, download it, write an extension, publish it to the marketplace, and become famous.